This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and you're here with Wong Xiaoning and Koo Soo Chuang. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Wong Kar Wah, PAC Deputy Chairman, and also Ipoh Timor MP, on vacancies within the Public Accounts Committee and what does that mean for check and balances in Parliament. But before that, markets, because in the US, it was another stellar day because the Dow was up 0.2%, S&P 500 closed up 0.3%, and Nasdaq, another record high, up 1.1% on the back of big tech going bonkers.
Yeah, Apple crossed the 2 trillion mark again, I think. Record high, I think $474. In Asia, the Nikkei was down 1%, preceding, of course, the American markets. The Shanghai was down 1.3%, Hong Kong down 1.5%. Singapore down 1.3%. And of course, yesterday, the KLCI was closed for Awal Muharram.
Yeah. So for more insight into what we can expect for global markets in the week ahead, and also a review of how things have been, we're speaking to Carlos Casanova, economist for Asia Pacific at Coface, a trade credit insurer. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning.
Now, the recent FOMC minutes released this week referred to considerable risks to the economic outlook due to COVID-19. Now, what kind of risks are they referring to, and what do you think how do you think the Fed will address them?
We believe that they're referring to predominantly risks on the employment and the inflation fronts. So the economy is not doing great. We all know that. We project that growth will fall by approximately minus 5.6% this year. In fact, the economy will probably experience a permanent reduction in output, which has implications on structural employment. So we do expect that to increase to 9% this year. And it will take a lot of time, but also policy support to bring this down. On the inflation front, this remains subdued, around 1% we expected around 1% for the whole year, owing to much weaker demand. And that will extend into 2021. So current projections for inflation next year are of 1.5%. Now, the Fed also removed comments about forward guidance in its minutes. And this means that they expect that it may take a lot longer to address these needs, these risks. So more likely than not, what we're going to see is that the Fed will not tighten until two conditions are met. The first one is, of course, inflation above the Fed's target of 2%. And the second is unemployment rate under 5%, which is a so-called natural unemployment rate for the United States.
Yeah, Carlos, U.S. weekly jobless claims came in higher than market expectations. How long do you think it will be before they start coming down? And are further stimulus measures needed?
So the volatility in claims filed in the past 2 weeks follows this lapse of an extra $600 of weekly unemployment benefits at the end of July. But if you look at continuing jobless claims, which is the number of people actually receiving unemployment insurance, this is still standing at a historic high, notwithstanding that improvement. And the insured unemployment rate, which is quite similar to the official unemployment rate, is still above 10%. So the labor market, in essence, is still in a very precarious situation, and it will take years before it returns to the strength that it had prior to the crisis.
So, Carlos, does this mean that the Fed will keep rates ultra low, I mean, almost close to zero for at least 2-3 years? Because these targets are quite far. Inflation above 2%, unemployment under 5%, almost seems quite difficult to imagine that they can do this in the next 1 or 2 years at least.
Correct. That's a very good point. So we are expecting to that these very accommodative conditions will remain at least throughout 2021, and going into 2022, it will really depend on the pace of recovery post-COVID. But low rates are here to stay, basically, yes.
Yeah, switching to Thailand, Carlos, Q2 GDP contracted 12.2% on the year, worst since 1998. Given the extension of a state of emergency to September, what's your outlook for the Thai economy? How will rising protests affect sentiment?
We have seen a number of authorities also revising their forecasts for Thailand. So the Bank of Thailand slashed its growth forecast for 2020 to minus 8.1. And the finance ministry was even more aggressive to minus 8.5. The rationale that they gave was mostly related to the economy's reliance on exports, which account for 60% of GDP, we take into account exports of goods and services, and also tourism, which accounts for a whopping 20% of GDP. Now, those factors are not going to turn around anytime soon, right? And at least until we have a vaccine that is commercially available. So we share that more negative view on growth for 2020. And in fact, had to revise down our forecasts from our previous -5.0% to approximately -8.0% this year as a result of that weaker than expected performance. And we are seeing signs of pressures in Q3, with a PMI remaining below 50, the business sentiment index remaining quite low, around 42, but also exports expected to contract by -20% in July. So we are seeing that weakness continue, and that doesn't bode well for the Thai economy. I would just want to say that while we do expect that the economy will recover to 3% in 2021, there are some significant risks. So the National Economic and Social Development Board said that household debt increased to the highest level in 4 years. That is not going to be good for domestic demand going forwards, as you know, there's been an increase in debt. So households are likely to not be able to consume as much when things do improve. In addition, there's been an intensification of social protests. And I would say that rather than this being a risk factor for investment, it may derail the recovery in tourism, which of course accounts for a significant proportion of the Thai economy in the next year. So that is something to continue monitoring going forwards.
And Carlos, let's look at oil, because you know, that's definitely something needed for Asian economies to recover. So what kind of price range for crude would be optimal for this region, considering some of us are all exporters like Malaysia or net energy exporters?
I was going to say, excluding Malaysia, which is indeed an energy exporter, a lot of the countries in Asia Pacific are actually net energy importers. So they do benefit from lower oil prices. In fact, this is one of the reasons why we think that the view on Asia is more supportive relative to other regions and other emerging markets like Latin America. However, you know, the opposite of that, so deflation and low growth would not be good either. So an oil price around $50 per barrel would be the sweet spot for Asia Pacific in terms of mitigating risks, but also not falling into that deflationary territory. Having said that, there are national oil companies like Petronas that face a higher break-even point of around $60 to $70 per barrel. So we're not expecting a turning point for Petronas anytime soon, and that means that for energy exporters like Malaysia, it just might be a little bit more challenging on the fiscal front, on the budget front, as a result of that subdued oil price, which we expect will remain low for the time being.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, economist for Asia Pacific at COFAS, giving us his views on the fact that ultra low rates are here to stay for the long time. Because if you look at the Fed target of unemployment at 5% and inflation at 2%, I think those are pretty lofty numbers that we're looking at. We are far, far away from that at the moment. And closer to home, $50 seems to be the sweet spot for oil, but not so good for us, Malaysia, because we are still a net energy exporter.
Yeah, production costs, of course, as Carlos was pointing out, somewhere higher than $50 a barrel. I also saw somewhere that 2025 was kind of like the year that the Federal Reserve is penciling any kind of rate tightening. That could be like, I mean, that seems quite far away as well, equally, right? 5 years is a long time.
Well, they said that in 2008, right? That, yeah, you know, once the economy recovers, they will start hiking rates. And the ultra-low rate environment continued until the COVID crisis. They were only just beginning to raise rates, I think only once or twice. So let's see how they're going to, you know, be able to do it in this current economic climate. But meanwhile, looking at one set of corporate results is actually Alibaba, because they just released quarter two numbers where their revenue increased 34% year on year to $14.3 billion across the whole group, attributed by strong recovery in commerce and cloud computing. The point is that they're pretty much where they were before COVID-19. So looks like they're one company doing pretty well.
Yeah, they said that the business has resumed to pre-pandemic levels, and that's a big thing for them to say. But you know, on the horizon is this whole specter of the US government and the restrictions that might place on Chinese technology companies. I think 2 weeks ago, the shares of Baba dropped by 5% on the fact that Trump was saying that he was going to expand the net to look at other tech companies beyond Huawei as well. So.
But it's not all bad news for Alibaba, because they are going to list their 33% financial platform, FinTech, and financial. So they are planning a dual listing in Hong Kong and Shanghai, where it could be the world's largest IPO in years, valued at $210 billion. So definitely we'll be watching this space. I think it'll be interesting to know what kind of valuations, what kind of appetite there is for a Chinese big FinTech out there. But up next, we'll be speaking to Wong Kar-wo, PAC Deputy Chairman and Ipoh Timur MP on vacancies within the Public Accounts Committee. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.